In pro football, black quarterbacks and the N-word matters. The acceptance of the black quarterback and the black male in society. Written by Ralph Kofe Alsop. Read by T.S. Coleman. Homage and appreciation to Alicia Garza, Opal Tometi, and Patrice Cullors. Because black pro quarterbacks don't matter and black portrayals in the media don't matter unless black lives matter. To the full-grown, full-blown, fire-breathing black women in my life, Grandmother May, Mother Lillian, daughter Whitney Jackson, and my colleagues Adrian Griffin, Carol Webster, Cheryl Brown Graves, Eloise Archibald, Sharon Hobbs, Kamala Mahdi, Janice Bennett, Audrey Murrow, and Jacqueline Bursch. Dedicated to black quarterbacks, or BQBs, Fritz Pollard, Warren Moon, Kondrich Holloway, and Randall Cunningham. Finally, in memory of Dr. Adrian Griffin, my halfback buddy, Salvatore Soroka, Betty Jenkins, my brothers Butch Joseph Alsop and Carl Edward Alsop. Introduction. In the late 1970s, this writer sought to explore the relationship between the black quarterbacks in the NFL and the black male in society. My unpublished paper, The Black Quarterback as a Product of Social Change, was cited in the published article, Causal Attributions of Performance for Black and White Quarterbacks in the NFL, A Look at the Sports Pages, A.J. Murrow and E.M. Curtis, Journal of Sport and Social Issues, August 1, 1994. Although consistent with my thesis, it was beyond my imagination to think that the emergence of black quarterbacks in the NFL and black males in society would rise to the level of an African-American's election as the president of the United States in 2008. Obviously, the position of quarterback is by no means the equivalent of being president, but ironically, the same racial slurs incurred by the first professional black quarterbacks were similar to those directed at the first black president. The quarterback position provides leadership, calls the plays, and receives too much credit for success and an inordinate amount of criticism for failure. The president, likewise, provides leadership and calls the plays for the nation, and he is highly praised and/or severely criticized for his perceived successes and failures. This inquiry focuses on the psychological cost of achieving success in a position that historically is considered whites only, like the restrooms and water fountains of the Jim Crow era. In the previous paper, I composed a list of black quarterbacks, which included Fritz Pollard, 1920, George Taliaferro, 1949, and Willie Thrower, 1953, who played in the 50s, and Marlon Briscoe, 1968, Jefferson Street Joe Gilliam, 1973, Warren Moon, Canadian Football League, 1974, NFL, 1984, CFL Hall of Fame, 2000, NFL Hall of Fame, 2006, Doug Williams, 1974, Kondrich Holloway, CFL, 1975, CFL Hall of Fame, 1999, James Harris, 1975, and Matt Reed, 1976, who played in the 60s and 70s, Jeff Blake, 1992, Randall Cunningham, 1985, Tony Banks, 1994, Steve McNair, 1995, Cordell Stewart, 1995. Dante Culpepper, 1999. Charlie Betch, 1999. Aaron Brooks, 1999. Sean King, 1999. Michael Bishop, 1999. And Akili Smith, 1999. All played in the 90s. In the 2000s, there are Antonio Wright, 2000, Quincy Carter, 2001, Michael Vick, 2001, Vince Young, 2006, Jason Campbell, 2006, Robert Griffin III, 2012, Russell Wilson, 2012, Colin Kaepernick, 2011, Cameron Newton, 2011, Tyrod Taylor, 2011, James Laneed Winston, 2015, and Dak Prescott, 2016. Achieving the status of professional quarterback does not scratch the surface of the psychological trauma these black men endured to obtain this goal. Not unlike a black male seeking the position of President of the United States. Unlike President Obama, many black quarterbacks fail under the pressure of this extreme notoriety and criticism. As someone who has studied psychology and minored in philosophy and sociology, this writer wanted to look at the political, sociological, and psychological landscape that produces these athletes. Sports psychologists need to understand, react, and be proactive with athletes of color as they pursue their dreams of success in sport and life. It is necessary to understand the impact of social and sports stereotypes that occur to athletes, particularly black, male and female, athletes, as they mentally and physically develop into the heroes and superheroes in the realm of sports. This writer also wanted to highlight the pitfalls that hasten black quarterbacks fall from grace. Since the end of Reconstruction and the subsequent emergence of the Jim Crow laws, African Americans have struggled to shed themselves of the racial stereotypes bestowed on them to justify the reason for their enslavement. Stupid, ape-like, violent, animal instinct, undependable, superstitious, and simple-minded. The black man was an animal with a big body and a small brain, as opposed to his European counterpart with a great mind and a serviceable body. These beliefs have resulted in preventing blacks from flying fighter planes, being in combat positions in the armed services, participating in certain sports, and being restricted to certain positions which do not require thinking, planning, or organization. Sports and gender. Racial stereotypes in sports. Boxer Jack Johnson, black heavyweight champion of the world, 1908 to 1915, was the embodiment of all the fears and stereotypes whites had about black men. The black quarterback later became the symbol of all the stereotypes attributed to the black male. Hence, when we talk about the black quarterback, we are really talking about the black race, which is why black quarterbacks matter. Jack Johnson was arrogant, outspoken, and rambunctious. He consorted with white women and flaunted his blackness every chance he got. He was usually a front-page item in black and white newspapers alike. There was a national effort to find the Great White Hope, who would defeat Johnson and put him on his black ass, where he and his race belonged. Flash forward to O.J. Simpson, who seemed like the antithesis of Jack Johnson. He was good-looking, fair-skinned, educated, and articulate. His easy smile, soft voice, and movie star appearance went against the stereotype. He was not just another black buck. He was not violent, and he could be trusted with white women. OJ was okay. There was no issue with him consorting with white women and later marrying a white woman. Unfortunately, OJ Simpson became the ultimate betrayer. It was as if Shakespeare's Othello was playing out before our very eyes. A jealous black man kills his estranged white wife, Nicole Simpson, and her white friend, Andrew Goldman. Jack Johnson and OJ reinforced the stereotypes created during the slave trade, and that continued to this day. It is possible to see professional sports as a system that controls and manipulates the status and image of black people. Sports organizations were similar to the agriculture system of the early South. Both systems were male-dominated institutions which controlled blacks for purpose of economic gain. Both systems had implicit and explicit beliefs and myths that manipulated and stigmatized blacks. Plantation owners determined how athletic boxing contests were organized, who the players were, and what the rewards would be. They would select two of their biggest, brawniest, and blackest bucks and toss them in a makeshift ring. The masters would guzzle gallons of whiskey and rum, crack jokes, and make big wagers while the two bucks beat each other to a bloody pulp. For inflicting severe injuries and perhaps even death on each other, the bucks might get a little better food, an extra set of hand-me-downs, and if especially lucky, their freedom. These black bucks were their master's prized gladiators. They had to be treated a little special. Hutchinson, 1994, 35. The motion pictures Django Unchained, 2012, and Mandingo, 1976, vividly depict these contests. More importantly, the slave owner realized all the profits and entertainment from these early athletic fighting contests. As important as the entertainment and economic aspects were, the plantation owner also reaped psychological benefits. These athletic contests allowed the owners to control both the physical and psychological behaviors of the enslaved athletes. In addition, they could decrease their fears of the black male and act out their fantasies and fear of the black male, the black female, and the white female. The myth was that blacks were similar to primates because of their color and their African heritage. Logically, this belief extended to the idea that primates, blacks, were inferior to humans, whites, intellectually and psychologically. Along with this forced association with primates, black males had an animal nature and a bestial sexual desire. This became the excuse that allowed white males to express their own sexual nature. With the black slave representing the negative sexual aspects of human behavior, the white slave owner was free to act out his sexuality without guilt. Because of his religious underpinnings, wanton sexuality was taboo, and sexuality was the province of white males. Only the slave owner had the power to express his sexuality and forcibly seduce the black female, while at the same time keeping the white female pure and away from anything sexual. The white male could also keep his guilt and anxiety controlled by believing that the black male wanted to seduce or rape white women. This self-created fantasy or fear further created the need to control the male. The sexually gifted black male was the biological complement to the sexually and physically endowed black female. The white male would have fantasies about the superhuman power of the black male. He had the extraordinary powers needed.